Welcome to the Biz Bros Podcast. My name is Kyle Nelson. I got my co-host here, Mr. Eli Libby.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today, man?
I'm great. Refreshed after the long weekend.
Memorial Day weekend.
Very important weekend.
It was a good weekend.
It was a very good weekend. So lucky to have you.
Yes, sir. So today we have an awesome guest, Melissa Kwan. We're going to talk a little bit about happiness as the foundation of life in one's career. She's got an awesome experience and some awesome stuff to share with us. But before we do that, we're going to roll that intro. What's going on? Welcome to the Biz Bros Podcast. My name's Kyle Nelson. I've got my great co-host and good friend here, Mr. Eli Lynn.
Thank you, Kyle. It's
beautiful
the episode,
day
man.
Today, man.
Absolutely.
Really excited for this episode. We've got a great guest.
Yep. Absolutely.
Number two, clear, simple images.
Amazon sellers.
The first thing that I'm following about in this article is
really looking for that initial print.
You need to be thinking about product photography and video production. All right. Today we have Melissa Kwan, who is the co-founder and CEO of eWebinar, an automated webinar solution that combines pre-recorded video with real-time interactions and live chat to deliver an engaging experience for attendees. Her and her team believe that by automating the repetitive and tedious task of giving the same onboarding training and sales presentation over and over, they free people up to focus their time in something else they value more. Melissa, welcome to the Biz Rose Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I'm super curious to hear. I mean, we're going to dive into your background, but tell us a little bit more about eWebinar.
Yeah, so I guess everybody knows what a webinar is.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a great way to get in front of a lot of prospects, a lot of customers, but there's a massive problem with webinars, which is someone has to do them live. Mm-hmm. So their nature is just not scalable, especially if you're working with customers around the world. Mm-hmm. So what eWebinar does is we automate that process by taking any video, turning it into a webinar. So you can do hundreds of webinars every single month without actually being in front of camera to actually deliver that webinar.
Wow.
That is very cool.
That is really cool. And then what is it like the engaging part of the platform, engaging part of the webinar? That's something that we've struggled with, but we've always, there's webinar fatigue, especially during.
Yeah, totally.
So how can you make it engaging? How does eWebinar do that?
Yeah. So I think number one is we have a complete like flexible schedule. So if you have one webinar Tuesday at 11, that's the time you have to join it, whether you're busy or not.
Yeah.
Most people don't. And our inboxes become like replay graveyards, right?
Totally.
For eWebinar, because it's recurring, you can pick a time that actually fits your schedule, which means you're not distracted at that time. But we also allow you to program in things, what we call interactions, like questions, polls, resources, tips. So it's less like a webinar, but more like interactive TV.
Cool.
So it's more of a two-way engagement. So as you're watching this video delivered, there's, you know, a poll will pop up or a question will pop up or a resource can pop up for you to download. So throughout the experience, you're engaging with it instead of, you know, just watching someone talk at you.
I love that. That is really, really cool. That's awesome. I was going to go somewhere else, but I'm not going to go. Anyway, so let's rewind a little bit before. Tell us a little bit more about your background and how you came into eWebinar.
Yeah. So I've been in startups for 12 years. eWebinar is my third startup.
Cool.
My first startup, you know, ran for 4 years, kind of morphed into my second one. So those two combined felt like a decade. But I was the person that was living with that problem of delivering the same demo, the same onboarding, the same training, the same feature updates to customers around the world in different time zones. And at the time, I was also digital nomading. So I did that for 4 years. So not only was I doing these repetitive webinars almost on a daily basis, I was doing them on like opposite time zones.
Right. Time zones, yeah. Totally.
So I had envisioned this magical product that would do my job for me while I would go and have fun. And so I dreamt of this product for probably 5 years straight in my previous company. And that company was acquired in 2019. And I just couldn't believe that something like this, like something exactly like what I had envisioned does not exist. So I decided that this was the problem that I wanted to solve once and for all.
Wow.
That's sweet.
That sounds awesome.
How did the beginning days of starting a webinar was like? What was kind of those first tasks, you know, you had to, that you were really good at and other things you had to kind of find people for to form a team?
I mean, it's a largely feels like the beginning days. I mean, every day is a new challenge. But in the beginning, I think, especially because I have had two previous startups, it was really getting myself to the point where, you know, I was confident enough and had enough conviction to say, this is the idea I'm going to pursue. Mm-hmm. Like, that was really the hardest thing, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you guys would know, you've got like 20 different ideas and they all sound really good. But once you start digging and you're like, wait a second, maybe it's not so good, or maybe someone else is already doing better, or I don't have the expertise for this. Right. So having 10 years of experience behind me, and 8 of those 10 years were really hard. So I think there's a point where experience hinders you, and I was definitely there. So in my mind, there were a lot of obstacles and a lot of roadblocks making me not want to do it. So I think the first thing, like getting myself to the point of saying like, this is the one I'm going to commit to, took a while. And then it was just about like, okay, what is it going to be called? Mm. What is, you know, how do we want to appear? Like, what is the branding, right? Like, how do we want to stand out, you know, amongst our competitors, right? Like, how do we want people to feel when they look at this brand? And all of that took like a good year and a half before the product even saw the light of day.
Wow. Yeah. That is very cool.
Yeah. How, just out of curiosity, you know, the webinar industry in the past 2 years and like video conference calls and all that has obviously just like boomed like crazy. How has eWebinar, how you guys like being loud and like trying to cut through all the noise?
I mean, that's the biggest challenge, right? Like, you can't SEO optimize webinar, right? Like, you know, like, and also like everyone knows what a webinar is, but no one's going to go online and search for like automating your webinar. Like that is relatively a new concept. Like, I would say like before us, there are like, of course there are other solutions out there. It's just not built the way that I, you know, that a way that I envisioned. So our, you know, our ideal customers, they live with this pain, but they're not going to Google to try to solve it.
Right.
True.
So figuring out how to cut through the noise continues to be an issue,
right?
But we have built an amazing piece of software. We have lots of great customers. So I think that's definitely step one. Nice. You know, marketing and sales is, you know, after that's taken care of, is probably the hardest thing as a startup,
right?
Especially when you're not venture backed, like we're not venture backed. So we can't just throw money at ads or like have a VC tell all the portfolio companies. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, coming on a podcast, for example, is you know, part of that effort of like, okay, how do we cut through the noise, right? How do we show people, or how do we tell people that if you live with this problem, there is a better way?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think it's a great a note for the audience, which is if you do have those, we have a lot of entrepreneurs that watch the show. So as they are calculating what to go after and what to pursue, I think it's a combination of, is there market fit, obviously, and then something that you're passionate about and you have that happiness that draws you to it. And I think that leads perfectly into the topic that we're going to talk about today.
Yes. Happiness is the foundation of life and one's career. Let's hear a little bit about that, just kind of like on a 30,000 foot level.
Yeah. So I've got a theory. Right. So after 10 years in two startups and always feeling a little bit frustrated, like, or a little bit miserable, right? Not being able to celebrate, you know, the small successes or the milestones, even though people are like, hey, you're doing great. And I'm like, okay, well, but I could be doing better. Right. I got some time after my last startup to think about like why that was. And I realized that I actually never really loved the industry that I was in. Like, I was in real estate tech. And, you know, before tech, I was in the real estate business. So I did it because I thought that was where my skill sets were. Like, I went into real estate tech because I thought, well, that's my experience. That's where my network is. And of course, that's where I need to go. But ultimately, right. I never asked myself, like, what are the things that make me happy? But also, like, I started those businesses in my mid-20s. So, you know, you don't really have that introspection to even or maturity, right? Like, people tell you that, but what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. Right. So I think I got some time to think about it. And I think, okay, a lot of people, they pick a major, right? Like, maybe your parents tell you you're supposed to do this, or maybe you're good at math, so you're like, I'll go into finance.
Right.
And after you graduate, like, by the way, you chose this when you were 19 or like 18. Right. So you graduate and you're like, okay, I'm going to go into a bank. Totally. Because that's my education. And then you spend the rest of your life trying to be happy with your choices. But, and the thing is, if you end up loving banking. Like, you've hit the jackpot.
Right.
But a lot of us, right, we try to get lost in the weekend, or we try to get lost in the extra long, you know, long weekend that we get, or our friends or whatever social event we have. And then we go back to work as if it's a chore. And a lot of times it is, because what really makes us happy and what we chose as our career is so misaligned, but we've already done it and we're too deep, and then we don't get to, and we don't get to, you know, maybe we have a family to support. So we don't just get to leave it. But what I realize is, what if, you know, we flip that around, right? What if we first find what makes us happy? And that doesn't have to be a very specific thing. It could be like, I want to work remotely, or, you know, I want to be in software. Like, it could be something really broad. What if we first defined the things that make us happy, and then we find a career that fits all those non-negotiable things, and then we go and acquire the skills for it? That actually is the easiest part. So I think if we realize that we could pursue life that way, that also allows us to choose new careers or different careers, no matter where you are in your life, because ultimately, if what you do serves your happiness, then you're going to wake up every day feeling energized, even if the task is hard. And that's more true for business owners and startups than I think anything else.
Sounds like a course I should have took in college. Career path development, what makes you happy? Something like that. Because too many people like graduate with a degree and they're just like, this sucks. They go after 2 years of work and they just don't like it.
Yep.
And that's so common.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. I feel like that's a message that I think a lot of people can resonate with, but they don't know how to get unstuck, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you find the happiness because you're supporting a family or because you have these bills, you know, and you don't have much saved up? That's a hard leap to take.
I think a lot of it comes down to comfortability. Mm-hmm. People are very comfortable and they don't really want to take that risk and be uncomfortable.
Right.
Thus, they kind of get stuck in unhappiness, grind 9 to 5, mm-hmm. Monday to Friday, work for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something that I heard Melissa, Kyle's heard it 1,000 times because I've said it, but when I was playing golf way back in the day, he's gonna complain. But I heard this thing that said, one of the guys I was playing with basically said, the worst round of golf is better than the best day of work. And that stuck with me from that point, because being an avid golfer, you know, shooting like 150, he thought that was better than the best day of work. And that stuck with me. And that's been a message that kind of been a heartbeat to what I try to do in the day to day.
Because you don't believe.
Well, I mean, I think you're right, right? Like, people love security.
Yeah.
Like, they love knowing exactly what's going to happen the next day. They don't want to walk away from a job. You know, it's really not that bad, right? We kind of talk ourselves into thinking, well, totally, I don't like it, but I should be grateful for it. And then eventually you kind of get into this vicious cycle. But I do think that if you do make a conscious effort to make small changes, then eventually that, like, you'll push yourself to potentially a bigger change.
Yep.
Right.
And that comes back to what we talk about a lot on the podcast and just in general is self-awareness. I think people of that acumen, having high self-awareness, you can be honest with yourself and say, yeah, I am grateful, but I'm really just throwing something under the rug.
Absolutely.
That's what I meant.
So tell us, is there times in your life so far through the startup experiences that you felt like, you know, you kind of found that, you know, you weren't totally stoked and happy and you were looking for that foundation of happiness, that once you actually went after it, it was like a flip in your, you know, your intuition and moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, this is like a daily struggle for me. Like, we're, you know, we're not self-funded. Like, myself, my co-founder put in like pretty significant capital. We have some friends and family money as well. And they're all like our best friends. So there's a lot of pressure that comes from that.
Yeah.
And especially in the early days when you don't have anything but a logo.
Right.
It's like constantly you're like, what if this doesn't work? And the thing about building a company is everything's amazing until your product goes to market. Right. Like, it's that's you're totally going to kill it until like someone looks at it and you're like, holy shit, like everything is breaking. Like, oh, maybe I don't like it as much as I think they do, or maybe the marketing is not as easy as I thought it would be. Like, people aren't just eating this up like I would. I struggle with that on a daily basis. And like, after a couple startups, I'm like, man, like, this thing is really hard. Like, why do I wake up and do this? Right. But why I'm doing this is, first of all, what, like, to take a step back, what makes me happy
yeah,
is honestly to not work at all. Like I love not working. I love like traveling and, you know, experience different cultures, partying on the weekends. Like I love doing that.
Yeah.
And what I do now is a means to get me there.
Mm.
So I think there's this whole, you know, I would say misconception that's like, you have to love your job. And I talk about this too, but do I love the task of building a startup? Like, not really. Like, I don't love that. It's a struggle. Like, I have to pay the bills. We're not profitable. I have to make sure my people stay. I want to constantly recruit the next best person to fill in a role that's empty. And then I have to figure out a way to pay them. Right. So all that is not fun. But what really keeps me going is I keep focusing on, okay, what is the end goal? Mm-hmm. Right. What is the thing that's going to get me there? Like, if this company generates, you know, enough profit, then we can make everybody involved have a good life. And that's what I'm aiming for. And that's the thing that gives me energy. And of course, like, it's a product that really makes people happy. Like, I don't have to do another live webinar again. Like, how amazing is that? And this product allows people to spend more time with friends and family or take more vacations, exactly what I want to do. So I love the idea of the product and what it's helping people accomplish. I like the end goal, and that's what I focus on.
That's killer.
I love it.
I think that's a lot. That's something like a lot of people forget about, right? Like they get so like mind wrapped around like, oh, the grind of the startup. And they don't even really think about that end goal anymore because they just know like, for most people, that end goal is so far in the distance. They know it's there. There's no date on it. There's no like, oh, we'll get there like at this time. It's just so far out there that you don't even think about that end goal anymore. You just are like,
totally
get there. And then 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, you're still like thinking it's years down the road when really it's like, you know.
That's a super good point. Super good point.
Well, as a founder, you have to be a bit delusional about that, I think. Like that's the thing that keeps you going, right? It's like, oh, I think it's just around the corner.
Yeah.
And that's actually how I think. It's like, oh, I think we're almost there. Like I always tell ourselves we're like one campaign away or two campaigns away or we're almost there. But the truth is you never know. You can only do as much as you can in front of you right now and hope that one of those things work out. Like I'm resolved in knowing that 9 out of 10 things I do today will not generate any result.
Yeah.
Right. But that can't stop me from doing it because I don't know what that one thing is.
It's very
true. We just have to keep going.
Interesting.
Couldn't agree more. I don't know how many times we've said, this is it. It's gonna be a tipping point.
Oh yeah. This is how we're gonna get all the new clients.
I think we should just
hockey stick this company. This is how
quote on the wall.
This is it
right here. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's so true.
If you were to go back, Melissa, and start over, what would you do differently in e-webinar particularly?
Okay.
I know you're bringing experience in. What would you do differently? I know there's probably a list, but if you can, you know, give us 1 to 2 items or whatever.
Yeah, if I could start over, and it only pertains to e-webinar. I would start by not hiring a development shop from day one. And having my co-founder instead from day one. So just a short backstory. I was so traumatized by my previous two companies that I'm like, you know what? I can do this on my own. I don't need a co-founder. I don't need a tech co-founder. I'll just hire a dev shop. They can be my co-founder. Yep. They'll do all the tech stuff. And then I'll do all the other stuff, all the business stuff, which is like that. Ultimately, it turns out you can't have a tech company without a tech co-founder. Like you can't have a restaurant without a chef, it turns out. So we spent a lot of money on a development shop, which I know tried their best, but it just wasn't co-founder level. And my co-founder now, who's also my life partner, by the way, he wanted to just to help out. And then I realized, you're actually an amazing coder. Like, why are we hiring this dev shop? Why don't we just end it with them? And why don't we work in an arrangement for you to be my co-founder? And that happened like a year after we started.
Oh, wow.
So I think had I known this, I would have treated that very differently and probably saved like, you know, 200,000 to 300,000.
Yep. Right.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, that's huge. I think a lot of people, they go down this entrepreneurial route whether they've had experience or not. And they're just so in the air about a co-founder. We speak about that a lot, you know, the power of a co-founder. And a lot of people go into things kind of, I can make the decision, but it's nice just alone having that soundboard, right? Kind of that gut check, kind of that intuition check, like, okay, let's talk about this and think more about it. But specifically with tech, yeah, that makes sense. Make sure you have someone that can help make those tech decisions from a technical aspect rather than just a kind of a marketing or sales aspect.
Well, now I have the other, now I like have the other scenario, which is like my co-founder, I live with him and we are on this 24/7. We're always talking about this. But at the same time, like while sometimes that's stressful, at the same time, like I truly believe that that's in itself accelerated the company.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
You're not waiting to make decisions, right? It's like, you can just have the conversation quickly and think about it and kind of brainstorm as quick as you want.
I would,
well, especially
I would
during
yeah, go ahead.
Especially during the pandemic, we didn't have anything else to do.
Right.
Like, yeah. This was all we did. So I think it actually accelerated it by a good year. Just in development.
It's interesting.
Yep. I think that's a positive. I do. I think you can turn the ship quicker, make a pivot. Cool. Well, that was awesome.
Yeah.
What a great,
so
great combo.
Melissa, if there's one thing that you're hoping that our audience can take away from this episode with you, what would that be?
I would say that you don't need to work harder, but you do need to work more creatively. Don't think that more time in your business means productivity or means you're more dedicated or more success. Like, just know that you can automate the things that you want to, and you can be away from your business and find better ways to do things and still be there for your customers. Because if you don't take care of yourself, then not only are you going to burn out, you're also not going to scale your business. Totally. So whether it's automating your webinars or you know, content through eWebinar or going to Upwork or, I don't know, having a CRM, right? Like something as simple as that. Like, know that you don't have to do everything yourself in order to prove that, you know, you're valuable in your business.
So true.
Such awesome advice. Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
So Melissa, if people wanted to look into your webinar, maybe follow you in your journey or get in contact with you, where would they do that?
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. So Melissa Kwan, my last name is spelled K-W-A-N. And please check out eWebinar at eWebinar.com. It's exactly as spelled.
Wow, that's an awesome domain.
That is a good domain. we scored on that one.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us. I know that a lot of people are going to walk away with some great tidbits and notes and hopefully some action items, I think. So thank you so much for joining us on the Biz Bros podcast.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks.
And if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the Biz Bros podcast. Go ahead and Google Biz Bros. We're going to pop up anywhere you listen to podcasts. Hit the subscribe button and the notifications, and you're going to be able to listen to awesome episodes with guests just like Melissa. So thank you so much, and we will see you on the next episode.
See you guys.